I'm Rechard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 186 for the weekend starting 4 August 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we visit the new AV and home theater showroom in Joburg run by a company called Homation. And we have their brand manager, Warren Husband. Welcome, Warren.
Hey, thank you very much, guys, for having us.
Pleasure. Also this week, Tencent and Naspers get into music streaming in South Africa. The hero who stopped WannaCry is arrested in the US, and Vodacom loses a top executive to SAA. Also, we need to talk about Telkom cutting its prices because we didn't quite get to it last week.
It's Friday. It means it's time to talk tech.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rechard? How's it, Warren?
Hey, guys. How's it?
So before we talk about Homation and home automation and all the cool stuff that we're surrounded by here today.
So many good toys to play with.
Let's do our quiz. Rechard, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. The first question in this week's quiz, who is a cybersecurity expert who stopped the WannaCry ransomware but was also arrested in the USA last week?
Second one, Seacom this week bought which Cape Town fiber provider?
And the third question, there's a new BlackBerry handset in South Africa. What is it called? And for a bonus point, which company has the license from Canada's BlackBerry to make it?
And we've got it here. We'll talk about it a bit later in the show. A fourth question this week, which well-known economist did Tech Central speak to in a podcast this week about how cryptocurrencies could change literally everything?
And the last question, Bitcoin has gone through a hard fork leading to the creation of a new cryptocurrency. What is this new cryptocurrency called?
As always, we'll get to the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. But we're at Homation in, it's Cromerville, this area, right?
Cromerville, that's right. Cromerville, Sandton.
In Sandton. Yep. And it's an, how would I describe it, an AV and home automation showroom.
It's heaven, Duncan. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I should not have my credit card in my pocket. It's dangerous.
Be careful.
So we're sitting in one of the rooms at Homation, which Warren told us before we started recording. Cost 3 million rand to build. I'm looking forward to the demo of some of the sound in here after we finished recording this afternoon. But Warren, welcome to the show. Tell us a bit about Homation, what it is you guys do.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having us again. I do appreciate your time. Homation, we're a company that focuses on import and distribution of a whole range of electronic products, focused primarily at the residential sector, you know, home theater, amplifiers, speakers, distributed audio, video, and of course, home automation as well by the use of Control 4. We've been around for 12 years now, and going strong. We're growing from strength to strength.
So is this showroom been around for a while then?
Well, we've been in these offices now for 3 years. We were previously in Randburg. I'd like to say up the road, but it's a little further than that. We will actually be moving to new offices in the future, bigger, better, and even better experience center. And it's about taking this industry to the next level.
Right, right. So tell us a bit about this room that we're in at the moment.
All right. So we are in the Steinway Lingdorf home theater demo room. You mentioned the price tag behind it. That includes the visual aspect, the JVC projectors, one of the brands we do, the Stuart film screens, also another brand that we are sole agents for. And then, of course, most importantly, the Steinway Lingdorf audio system as well. Steinway Lingdorf was a venture started by Peter Lingdorf, who's actually part owner of NAD Electronics. He's also got his own Lingdorf audio brand. He approached Steinway & Sons, the manufacturers of the finest pianos in the world, said, I want to use your logo, your crest, as part of an audio venture that I've got in mind. They said, it sounds awesome, but on one condition, you have to guarantee performance. And so started the journey of no holds barred, no limit on budget. Let's recreate the audio experience from the ground up. And this is the room you're sitting in.
I don't think I've ever been in a room that cost 3 million rand before.
No, this is ridiculous. I want to know, what is the benchmark for a good home audio setup, home theater setup these days? I mean, obviously, you guys are working with a very specific clientele, but for the rest of us, what is the good benchmark if you want to get into home automation? Home automation and home audio and your cinema room.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, okay, so we've covered two or three different topics there. From a home theater point of view, I suppose it's down to the experience, you know. The intention is to try and recreate what you would experience at a professional cinema. You know, when you go and watch a movie at a Sturkinemkor or a New Metro, you want to try and recreate that experience, hopefully a bit better though, you know, from a quality point of view. And you know, there's nothing better than being able to pause the movie at any stage, go grab yourself some popcorn. You know, if you need to get up to go to the toilet, you can do that in the comfort of your own home with friends and family around you. And the intention, I suppose, is to recreate that experience from a home theater point of view. From a distributed audio point of view, and let's include home automation, it's about experience. It's about lifestyle. You know, it's about having your favorite music available in various rooms of the home, whether entertaining or just relaxing. You know, from an automation point of view, incorporating multiple subsystems, and I'll explain that, into the experience itself. So I gave you guys a quick demo earlier. You know, dinner time, you press the dinner button, an announcement throughout the house to get the kids and family members around the dining room table. The music is set up, the lights are, you know, the lighting scene is set, focused around the dining room table. And I don't know, perhaps you mute other services or systems in the house to avoid distraction. But it's about the experience. It's about the lifestyle that we're creating.
And really good music throughout the house.
Hopefully very good music around the home.
How hard is it to do this stuff? I mean, do you have to be a bit of a computer nerd to be able to set up these systems? I mean, obviously you'd get someone to come and help you install them, et cetera, but if you want to create certain programming to have certain things happen at certain times, is it as simple as firing up an IFTTT type of application and just saying, you know, setting the parameters, or do you actually need to be quite au fait with technology to be able to use these systems?
Well, look, from a home automation point of view, Control 4 is sold and installed and programmed through a network of Control 4 certified custom integrators. It's not something that was ever intended to be done by your homeowner. I think it's fair or safe to say that your average homeowner couldn't connect their DSTV decoder, never mind get lighting to do what you're hoping it to do. So the intention has always been for a custom integrator to do this for the homeowner. But of course, we try and make certain aspects of the home automation experience accessible for your homeowner. So simple things like, you know, creating playlists and saving favorites, maybe adjusting and saving lighting scenes, you know, so that you can customize that experience. But the integration of alarms and CCTV and you know, having that one touch button to close gates and arm alarm systems and all the rest of it, I think is a bit out of the reach of your average homeowner. And that's why you need a certified custom integrator to assist you along the way. Also to help you design and, you know, put together the solution that's going to tick the boxes you as a homeowner are looking for, and hopefully at the budget you can afford it as well.
And budgets really can stretch from relatively small to out of this world, right?
Yeah, well, look, I kind of say it in jest, but most of our listeners will understand what I'm saying. It's kind of like asking, well, what does a car cost? Well, you know, all cars will get you from home to work and back again, but how do you want to do it? Do you want to do it at 250 km an hour? Do you want to do it comfortably in the back seat with a chauffeur? And, you know, it's those kinds of decisions in a home automation experience that will determine the budget. You know, do you want high quality audio throughout the entire home? Are you happy with a bit more of a budget solution for maybe guest rooms and rooms that aren't used as often? Video distribution, do you want standard HD or do you want the new ultra high definition 4K experience? You know, from a video point of view, that's where we're going. So that's where most people are setting their homes up. And of course, those decisions will determine budget as well as number of zones required from an audio or video point of view, number of lighting circuits required throughout the home, etc.
So this all sounds rather technical, and like you said, you probably have an installer to do this. But what we're also seeing from our side in the tech space globally is these things are becoming more accessible. I mean, you can buy security cameras that you plug in separately. You can buy lights that change based on an app. They might not all talk to each other. But, you know, the Internet of Things is going to kind of shape that. How do you see your space now, very specialist industry, change with the introduction of these new, more accessible tools?
To be honest with you, we're really excited about it because it's bringing home automation and home integration into the hands of an audience who maybe could never have afforded or were never really interested in this sector of the market. So, you know, companies like Apple with their home kit, you know, Samsung are doing a similar thing. A lot of these large corporations are starting to roll out DIY home automation, which I think will be a great gateway into this experience. I think it's going to be a frustration for a lot of end users who are maybe trying to do home automation as cost effectively as possible. They've got an expectation or an outcome that they're aiming for, but the limited capabilities of those types of systems maybe won't tick the box that they're looking for. And that's where the custom integrator is going to step in and roll out a solution that is all-encompassing and brings it all together.
But give those guys a place to start. I mean, it's easier for me to start with lighting my home or cameras in my home than a full-on 3 million rand room, which is more than my house itself.
and mine. Yeah, no, you're 100% right. It's going to put it in the hands of people who were never on never going to be our target anyway. So we're really excited about it. It's a great step forward for home automation, for integration. You know, there's every device that comes out on the market nowadays has got an app for control. You know, so now what a home automation system does is basically take those five or six different apps for cameras, for alarms, for AV experience, and bring it into one cloud, so to speak, one umbrella that manages all those subsystems together rather than separately.
What is the backbone of a smart home, connected home, automated home look like today? What is the best practice? Do you deploy, say, gigabit Ethernet all over a house, or is Wi-Fi good enough to do a lot of this stuff? What would you recommend a homeowner doing?
Well, you've kind of ticked the box there. It's the backbone of your smart home solution is your network, is the IT domain, or the IP domain. From a wired wireless point of view, wireless is great for those devices that will be roaming throughout the house, but our recommendation has always been and will always be cable is king. So any device that's going to or can be connected to the network by means of a hardwired cable, that's the way you're going. Gigabit switches, you know, preferably one main switch, or, you know, truncating multiple switches if you need that many ports. Wi-Fi is for your mobile devices, phones, laptops, tablets, etc. Everything else, if possible, connected with a cable.
Yeah.
Now, the digital home of the future, we've started to see, or at least the entertainment side of things, streaming has become a big part of it. We saw the integration with DStv, that's obviously been done. But how do you guys look at streaming services, especially with everything going cloud-based? Is it changing some of the things you're doing? And, you know, what are some of those services that can work with your systems?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, from a Control 4 point of view, we'll pretty much integrate with everything. I like to say if it can be controlled, we can control it. So you make mention of DStv. Of course, we can integrate a DStv and distribute that throughout the home. But I think what a lot of the listeners will already be aware of is the streaming services like your Netflixes, etc., are available to your smart TV already. So already we can start to see in our environment that distributed video is currently being used primarily for DStv decoders. Even DStv themselves are aware of this and starting to move a lot of their services over to streaming services. So from a product point of view, I think distributed video will become less and less a requirement as the video becomes available at the endpoints themselves, TVs and media players. You know, from a lighting point of view, lighting control will always be popular, etc. And alarm integration, all the other bits and pieces I don't believe is going to be changing, but the streaming services are just adding value to the system, adding available sources to the system, be it visual or audio streaming.
So does Control 4 use like an app-based, or are you going to use a browser to get to these services? Like how open is Control 4 for guys who like to tinker a bit?
Not. It's pretty much closed down.
It's an Apple environment, basically. So we should be fine with that.
You can say that. It's, you know, for quality purposes, for control of that experience, Control 4 have locked that down. So, you know, in terms of interacting with the system, we like to think anything should be an interface. Of course, Control 4 have their own dedicated touchscreens, be it on-wall or portable. You're able to integrate with a hard button remote control, which is always nice when you just want to sit and watch TV. You can use your TV as a touchscreen almost by use of the remote control. But of course, then bringing in third-party devices like phones and tablets should also be available for control interfaces as well as computers within the home as well.
It's a modular thing. You can add little bits on as you need it.
Absolutely.
But most things are supported.
Most devices are supported. And like I say, really a good home automation system should cater for a whole range of interfaces for the end user to interact with. Some have advantages over others, but it should be available to pretty much every device.
I'd imagine a lot of the customers who are buying this have bits and pieces of existing systems in place. How well does it play with those existing technologies?
Yeah, well, like I say, again, I mean, if it can be controlled, we can control it. Right. So, you know, simple devices, you know, DSTV, we keep coming back to, but why not? A DSTV decoder is, it's a little infrared emitter that simulates the original remote control.
Right.
I had a client who was doing a Control 4 integration into pretty large home. Client wanted the old VCR to be incorporated into the system.
Wow, that is awesome.
I couldn't understand why, but it's just an infrared remote control. You just simulate the remote as if you had the original remote in hand.
But you'll have to manually change those tapes.
Unfortunately, tapes need to be manually changed. That's right, yeah.
What's the profile of the typical customer of a Control 4 system?
Your typical Control 4 customer, well, let me put it this way. I made mention slightly earlier in the demo that Control 4 can be as simple as a universal remote control for an existing home theater or TV system to as complicated as an all-encompassing home automation solution. So, you know, from a budgetary point of view, you're looking anywhere between 20,000 and 20 million rand, which is quite a wide scale, you know, in terms of clientele. Mm-hmm. But the customer profile is typically universal remote control to make the AV system a bit easier to use, allowing, you know, the wife to use it and the kids to use it and the grand to use the system without having to be a rocket scientist when it comes to that. Mm. But admittedly, most clients who are looking at Control 4 are looking at it from a home automation point of view, incorporating lighting, security, distributed audio and video experiences as well.
I think let's talk a bit about some of the other technologies that you have here.
Cool.
You've got a wide range of speaker systems, ranging from sort of, you don't do entry level. You're saying beforehand, if you can buy it in Dion White, it's probably not in the showroom.
Absolutely.
So it's the next sort of level up, and then going all the way up. Big focus on home audio. What are some of the trends in that space? What are you seeing? What sort of interest are you seeing from customers? And what is the current sort of state of the art in home audio?
Sure. Yeah, so I mean, just to talk about a couple of brands that we have in our portfolio,
sure.
The three main speaker brands that we do are Monitor Audio, Klipsch, and Boston Acoustics. I'll talk about two of those. Monitor Audio is the largest privately owned speaker manufacturer in the UK. I like to say that they've got a speaker that caters for pretty much any requirement, and in a lot of cases, when it comes to installing speakers in a home, the wife acceptancy factor that we mentioned, you know, guys like a big fancy box, you know, that you can see where my money's gone. The ladies of the home, not so, but they don't want to see the speakers. They don't want to see that technology floating around the house. So Monitor Audio caters for both sides of the scale. Mm-hmm. Klipsch is an American brand, used in most of the commercial cinemas in the States, number one selling speaker in the United States as well. Caters for, they like to say themselves, we do a speaker that 60% of the population will like, and if you're in the 40, buy something else. But most guys love the Klipsch range because it's loud, it's in your face, but without losing on quality, clarity, and musicality, so to speak. Electronics, Denon, NAD, and Rotel, catering for your mid to higher end categories, and they'll focus on stereo and home theater experiences as well.
So in terms of, I saw a very nice looking speaker outside. It's obviously aimed at the very expensive home theater. It's got a THX logo on it. these technologies, Dolby, THX, all of these things, they used to be everywhere, or seemingly everywhere. And I know they're obviously still current, but how does that make a difference, or that rating make a difference to the audio at the end of the day? And do a lot of your hardware still support that type of technology?
THX is an interesting story. If I remember correctly, and I do stand to be corrected, but I think Logitech Creative have bought the THX brand. So it's not quite the same as it used to be when it was George Lucas with Skylabs, if I remember correctly.
It used to be a very specific certification that you get with...
Absolutely, yeah. Right. And electronic devices, speakers and amps, etc., that met that THX standard were very highly rated. The reality is you can go to an incredible connection nowadays and buy a little 2.1 computer system that's rated THX. Well, they own the brand, they can say anything they want. So these days, THX as a standard is less popular in a residential realm. Klipsch still have a range of THX speakers, and it's, you know, one of the selling features that we say is it's again almost guaranteed performance. You know, you buy the system and it's going to blow your mind in terms of performance.
So it's not necessary to have that kind of certification, as long as you got the right things, the fidelity, the lower bass, the bass kind of tones, mid tones, and
yeah, absolutely. And all of that stuff is also then down to personal preference. You know, I might say that I love the Monitor Audio brand because it ticks the boxes that I want. You might say, no, I don't like that. I like Klipsch. I like to bring cars back in because we all understand cars. You know, it's kind of like asking BMW, Audi, your Mercedes, which is the best? It doesn't matter what you say. I can say different, and it's my opinion. Audio is very much the same
to that thing you're listening to.
Absolutely. If I can add, though, you know, to cover the trends or what's happening in the industry from a home theater point of view, well, first of all, speakers, they're going in wall. You know, homes are being built slightly smaller, rooms are slightly smaller, and floor space is a premium. So taking up a whole bunch of space with a big floor standing speaker is not so popular anymore. Having it hidden behind a projector screen or mounted in a wall or in a ceiling frees up the space, but still doesn't compromise necessarily on the audio performance. So that's one of the big trends. And then in the home theater space, Dolby Atmos is the thing we're all talking about. It's taken surround sound, the traditional 5.1 or 7.1 that most of us would be familiar with, and adding in an extra set of in-ceiling speakers, typically two or four in-ceiling speakers, to create what's called an immersive audio experience.
Is that for movies?
Primarily focused around movies, but you can see a lot of music videos, etc., that are starting to incorporate the Atmos technology just to kind of take it to the next level.
I was going to ask about music. What are audiophiles using these days? I mean, I know I just listen to Google Play Music streaming in my car. I know the quality is probably not that great, but then my audio gear is probably not that great either. With the guys who are buying this high-end equipment, what are they using as the audio source primarily?
Yeah, so to go back to streaming that we were talking about, there's a service called Tidal, which is a high-resolution streaming service. Different pieces of equipment will support different levels of high resolution, but you are able to, in the maximum case, get the studio masters streamed directly to your device. So streaming doesn't necessarily mean a lack of quality, certainly ups the bandwidth, but the high resolution is still available even in a streaming service. CDs are becoming a thing of the past these days. I can't tell you when last I bought a CD.
The quality of a CD is not that great anyway, is it?
Absolutely. You know, it's half or a quarter of the bandwidth capabilities of a studio master. So yeah, if you really want the highest quality, you're probably going streaming, or for the old school guys, vinyl.
Vinyl. I was going to ask about vinyl. In fact, I saw there was a record player in the corner
right
there. What brand is that? Is that the only?
So vinyl that's player? A brand called Thorens. Also, they manufacture some of the best turntables available in the market, ranging from relatively cost effective to super high end. That's for the guys who are still in love with vinyl. And to be honest, many people would have said vinyl was dead 10, 15 years ago, made a bit of a comeback, and it's a nice to have. It's still got that old school feel to it. You know, it's got that. I speak to my father-in-law who quite appreciates his music, and he tells me of you used to go buy a vinyl and you look in the cover and you just the whole experience, the touch and feel experience.
I love the sleeve, the big sleeve,
absolutely
that sort of thing. But I've got two friends who are on completely opposite sides of this. One of them loves vinyl. He buys vinyl all the time. He loves the sound. He says he'd rather buy that than get the digital FLAC download. Then another friend of mine says, why on earth would you want to listen to vinyl? The quality is terrible. And he insists on the FLAC format. He says FLAC is the best for listening to music, and he won't touch compressed music, and he won't touch vinyl.
Sure.
So I think it comes down to feel as well. I mean, with so many things, you know, us techies, we know this, you know, audiophiles know this. There's a feel to music. On vinyl, there's a specific feel, and there's a specific feel to really well-produced, high-quality FLAC files. You know, you can probably hear certain sounds better with either or, depending on what your flavor is. You just need the right speakers to enhance it, I guess, but there's no right or wrong here. What do you think?
No, again, sound is down to personal preference. You know, I sit on the fence on this one. I love the convenience and ease of use from a digital point of view. I love the warmth and old school, the crack and popple of a vinyl. You know, from an audiophile point of view, a lot of guys say nothing beats the warmth of a vinyl, and that's something I've noticed in studio recordings. Oftentimes, while the recording is done digitally, they'll run the recording through tape, through an analog stage, just to bring that warmth into the recording and then back into the digital domain to make it nice and easy to use and distribute. So really, it comes down to preference. Do you want to get up to go and change the vinyl from A side to B side, or do you just want to press skip on your app?
I think that's also part of the beautiful thing about listening to vinyl is you do interact with it more than just a streaming service where you press a button. Same with CDs and tape, I guess. You know, to get to the end of a song on a tape, you had to fast forward. You know, it wasn't just playing any track on that
skip and go.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Instant gratification isn't all it is out to be. Another thing that I'm thinking, I don't know if you've ever been to the cinema's 4DX experience, where they introduce all these crazy things, you know, things blowing in your head, or, you know, there's this brush that tickles your legs or something.
That's right.
Have you had any weird requests like that from customers who want a real experience?
Look, in the home front, I can't say I've dealt with that too much. One of the other brands we have in our portfolio is called D-Box, which is a motion platform. Basically, it's a platform that sits on four aircraft grade actuators, and motion maps according to the movie you're watching. So it will shake the chair, move the chair up, down, left, right, backwards and forwards, based on the visual indication. Very much like the 4D experience, just maybe a little bit more.
So you'll feel it. There's a bit of bass in there too.
Absolutely. So as the bass kicks in, the whole chair rumbles, but it's more than just a butt kicker. It really is a 3D platform that allows the chair to move in sync with the actual movie and what's happening on screen.
Now, my question following up on that is video quality. You know, a few years ago, it was plasma versus LCD. From the looks of it now, it's which projector to buy and which screen to use with it. Do people still buy normal TVs in a setup like this that costs 3 million rand?
Yeah, look, I mean, your home cinema would primarily be driven from a projector screen scenario to replicate the large screen experience that you're going to get in a commercial cinema. Of course, if a client likes to use their home theater, you know, most days of the week for a couple of hours, the decision might go towards a TV because of the limited lamp life that a projector would typically offer. That's starting to move away now with laser projectors offering 25,000-30,000 hour lamp life, so to speak. So that's kind of getting away from that, but that's still coming in at a cost nowadays. You know, the JVC equivalent is 700,000 rand, but that being said, a TV at 110 inches is 1 million rand anyway. So, you know, there are people who are willing to spend that money on a TV. Why not on a good quality projector and screen, which can, one, go bigger, and two, is as good in terms of picture quality and brightness as a TV anyway?
Good point. Good point. Richard, I don't know if you have anything else.
Last question, and again, leading on to the video stuff, is gaming. I mean, I think for me, the next step, videos and audio is one thing, but gaming just takes it to another level, I guess. And because gaming is such an acceptable form of a pastime these days, I'm sure a lot of these guys also integrate some really serious gaming setups.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, the gaming industry, I'm sure you guys are aware, is bigger than the movie and music industry put together. So there's a lot of technology and a lot of development that's happening on the gaming front, and they're embracing the technology as much as everybody else, including Dolby Atmos, including 4K capabilities. Mm. You know, surround sound is old school. Atmos is the way going forward, or Aura or DTSX, which are competing formats. But the gaming industry really does push the bounds of this technology. And from an experience point of view, I've got a demo on one of the discs that I have here, where it's Dolby Atmos in a first-person shooter experience, and it just changes everything.
So we're not going home this weekend, right? We're staying here.
We'll stay here for the weekend. I hope you don't mind.
More than welcome.
I understand that if you're an ordinary customer, I know a lot of people listening to this podcast, they're immediately thinking, wow, this is insane and I want to come check this out. They can, but there's a catch.
Yeah, so look, I mean, we as a company are not directly open to the public yet from an experience point of view. We would encourage, if you're keen on coming to check out some of the technology and you're looking at incorporating something into your home, be it a simple home theater or a whole home automation solution, get in touch with us. Let us put you in touch with a custom integrator or retailer who'd be able to assist you forward, and they will coordinate the demo experience here at our offices to allow the end user, guys listening to the show, to be able to experience what we're now talking about.
Right, right. Great. Well, I think we need to move on to the news. There's quite a bit to talk about. MTN did results this week, which were sent the share price down a bit. But impressive presentation from Rob Shooter, the new group CEO. It was his first presentation to shareholders. And I thought he did a very good job setting out the strategy and what he's going to attempt to do over the next few years. So investors, the shareholders, certainly seemed a bit taken aback by the numbers, but longer term, it might be a good buy based on the strategy he set out, and he can achieve what he's planning to do.
Sure.
Lots to talk about. I'm just trying to bring up my show notes here. Tencent and Naspers, through their joint venture called Tencent Africa, announcing this week, while we're talking about music, that they're going to be launching a new streaming music service in the South African market. Really a very competitive market.
Yes, I was just going to say, another one.
Yeah, another one. I'm trying to remember, count them all. Maybe we can do it here. There's Simfy, Deezer, Google Play Music, Apple Music.
Of course.
What are we missing?
Spotify for the international.
If you can get Spotify with a VPN.
That's it.
What else? That's about it, eh?
iTunes Music. Did we put iTunes Music on that list?
iTunes Music was, well.
Oh, was it on that list?
Apple Music, yeah.
Apple Music, sorry. Tidal, we mentioned earlier.
Is Tidal officially available here? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Tidal is available locally. In most cases, the limitation you're going to get from most devices is they won't support the true high-resolution studio masters.
Right.
There's one or two exceptions to that rule. But Tidal, from a high-quality audio point of view, is available, yeah.
Okay. Mm. So we're looking at half a dozen of these guys already.
Absolutely.
Tencent Africa coming in with Jukes, offering a similar sort of offering. They say they're going to be focusing quite heavily on local content as well, and they've done deals with various local studios to do that. But it's a competitive market, and what must be undoubtedly be quite a small market as well. The number of people who can actually afford to stream audio at home or on the go is probably fairly limited in this market.
Yeah, it's slightly different to the guys streaming video, because there you want two or three services to kind of make sure you have the library of stuff to watch. But with music, it's kind of different, because most of these guys do offer most of the major albums that you want.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's they're coming into a competitive market, $60 a month, which is where just about everyone
else
is.
About on par,
You're going to pay more if you subscribe to Spotify. I think that's $10 a month.
That's correct.
And
Tidal is also
$20 a month.
$20 a month, I think.
So $60 a month, it's a no-brainer for me. I don't know about you, Warren.
I think the biggest limitation up until recently has been the data side of things, you know, to be able to not necessarily, well, I suppose, afford the data for the streaming. you know, with data being relatively expensive from a, you know, your average user point of view, I'm currently on LTE, and, you know, just to get 50 gigs a month is a good couple $100.
Yeah.
Fiber coming into most neighborhoods nowadays, or neighborhood near you soon, is starting to make it a bit more affordable. But still, I think the streaming services, be it audio or video, is really focused at the slightly higher end of the market, until such a time as data becomes easily accessible and cost effective as well.
For sure. But I mean, I personally used to spend, I used to buy three, maybe four CDs a month at a cost of 100 to 180 rand a CD.
That's right.
Now I'm spending $400. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm spending $60 a month and getting it all plus.
That's right. Absolutely.
No, it's fantastic. I mean, my life as an audio lover has changed so much since streaming services.
Yeah.
And one of the things I wanted to ask you, actually, Warren, what is your favorite streaming service? What is the one that you go back to and that you can't stop using?
I must be honest, it's Deezer. I got involved with Deezer 3-4 years ago. I've never bought a CD since. Everything I'm looking for, 99% of what I'm looking for is available in a quality that is acceptable to me. Mm. You know, in my home, it's not necessarily about high resolution, sitting down and critiquing my music. Don't get me wrong, I love that as well. But it's about having the music available on my phone when I'm in the car, on my patio, when I'm just chilling, maybe throwing the ball for the dogs or entertaining. And Deezer is quality enough, convenient enough, and cost-effective enough to tick all those boxes for me. Mm. So that's my go-to streaming service.
They're a French company, aren't they, Deezer?
I think they are. That's right, yeah.
Which one do you use, Richard? You're on Simfy, aren't you?
I used to be a big lover of Simfy Africa, but since I changed to iTunes Music, I think, I don't know, I didn't like the interface at first, but there was just something about it. The more you use it, the more intuitive it becomes. I love the fact that it works with Shazam. So any song I Shazam gets added to a playlist for me, to my Shazam playlist.
Oh, it's one of the reasons I use SoundHound, actually, because SoundHound allows me to open Google Play Music.
Okay. It's all about, I think it's all about the look and feel of the thing, how it integrates with your life, because everything is Mac in my life. You know, it works. You know, it works across all my devices. Yeah. There's no, I think, right or wrong, but iTunes Music is just so beautiful these days for me.
Yeah.
And the recommendation for playlists is also pretty spot on.
That's awesome.
We need to take an ad break. We'll be back right after this.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BitCo.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, guys?
Hey.
So, Marcus Hutchins, I don't know if you've followed the story. He's the guy...
The hero, or not hero.
The anti-hero now, possibly. He's the guy who stopped WannaCry in its tracks. You remember WannaCry was that ransomware virus that was caused mayhem in the National Health Service in the UK. I think FedEx was hit by it. There were a number of companies around the world that were particularly hard hit by the WannaCry ransomware. Now, what he did was he looked at the code behind WannaCry, and he realized that if he registered and created a certain domain, a URL, that it would stop the spread of WannaCry in its tracks. So he did that. It cost him, I don't know what it was, £10 or whatever it was to register the domain, and WannaCry stopped.
Wow.
And he was called a hero, and he was profiled on television and on radio and all over the place.
And he just recently attended Black Hat as well as, you know, one of those guys that everybody was wanting to talk to because of this incredible thing he did.
Indeed. He traveled to Las Vegas for this annual global cybersecurity conference. I forget, it's called DevCon or something like that.
Mm.
And traveling to the States, he got picked up by the American authorities and arrested. And Apparently, from what I've read so far, I haven't looked this afternoon, basing on a story I saw earlier this morning, but he's been accused of being involved in developing malware that can be used in attacks on, I think, banking systems.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is all accusations, and I see the Electronic Frontier Foundation is coming to his aid. I'm sure the full story is going to come out, and there's he's been arrested, but there's no
official charge
from what by this morning anyway.
Sure.
But interesting. I mean, this guy is a surfer from southern England. He codes in his bedroom, I think at his parents' house, and he became this hero, and has been arrested. It's an interesting story to watch for sure.
Wow.
But it certainly was the talking point of the show in Las Vegas this year, because this guy was one of the star attractions. Next thing, he's arrested. Where is the story going?
Maybe he just took out his own competition. You never know. Might have his own malware out there.
Interesting story coming out of Vodacom last night. Vuyani Jarana, who was the chief enterprise officer of Vodacom, so he headed up all their basically Vodacom business, everything except the consumer retail business. He has resigned and will be joining South African Airways as its new CEO. First thing I thought when I heard this is, does he need his head read?
Wow, yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
I mean, who in their right mind is going to go into that political nest, space, viper's nest?
Yeah,
With the company's losing money hand over fist.
Bailout over bailout.
Yeah, it's a disaster. Allegations of rampant corruption. Turning this thing around is going to be incredibly difficult. In a highly political environment, I'm sure he's done the calculations. I'm sure he's spoken to the board members, and there were a number of board members who supported his appointment. One of them was not Duda Mayeni, the chairwoman, who is we all know is close to our president.
That's right.
I'm sure he's a smart guy. I've met him on a number of occasions. I'm sure he's done his calculations and figures that this is a good career move. But we've seen other people with great reputations going into state-owned enterprises and not coming out
surviving
clear on the other side.
That's right, to see them come out the other side.
But he's a smart guy, and I think that it's good that a company as troubled as SAA can get someone in there, because they need someone desperately to turn this thing around. I mean, it's you and me who's paying for this airline.
Mm. That's right.
How many more bailouts can we afford, let's be honest?
We can't afford any. I mean, they're talking, I mean, Malusi Gigaba, the finance minister, is talking about selling off state assets now in order to just fund the black hole that some of these state-owned enterprises have become, particularly SAA. Mm. In fact, there's growing speculation, and I think it would be a good thing if it happens, that they'll sell Telkom.
Sure.
They own 39.3%, I think it is currently, of Telkom. The PIC, which is the government pension fund, owns another, I think, 12 or 13% of Telkom. I'm not sure how that money could be applied to SAA. If I was a government pensioner, I'd be very unhappy if they were selling stakes in well-run companies like Telkom and pouring that money into a black hole like SAA. Yeah. But certainly, the 39.3 percent direct stake that government has in Telkom could be sold. Mm. I think Telkom's market cap at the moment is around 35 billion rand. So 40% of that, you're probably looking at about 15 billion rand. Is that enough to fund SAA? I don't know
based on some of the previous numbers I've seen.
Vuyani Jarana, it's a first step getting the right CEO in there. Mm, they haven't had a permanent CEO since 2015. They've got a dysfunctional board, or they've had a dysfunctional board. Mieni seems to be on her way out. I think that's the next thing that Malusi Gigaba is going to be doing, is firing her. Which is a difficult one, given that Pravin Gordhan couldn't do it because of her proximity to the president.
That's right.
But maybe he's got the political clout to do it. He probably has more legitimacy, he's probably more politically more powerful in relation to the president than Pravin was.
Sure.
So maybe he can. Maybe he can effect the change that needs to be effected there. But. Good luck, Mr. Jarana.
An interesting one to watch.
You're going to need it.
Yeah, that's right.
And then last week, we recorded last Thursday, actually, and we had the story already, but we were under embargo, so we couldn't talk about it on the podcast, unfortunately. The news is a little old now, but I think it was such big news last Friday that it's worth talking about anyway, and that's Telkom cutting prices and doing so quite aggressively. So they've, as you know, I think Telkom has been criticized in the past. OpenServe in particular, their wholesale arm, has been criticized for being quite expensive relative to competitors like Vumatel and some of the other fiber operators in the market. And Telkom's own pricing has been quite high relative to some of the competitors out there. And so OpenServe, just I think it was just 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, announced that they were cutting wholesale prices quite dramatically. And Telkom was amongst the first, if not the first company to announce that they were going to be reacting to that. And they've slashed prices, and they're going for an uncapped model. They're punting uncapped. The new plans are called Home Unlimited. They're punting uncapped as the basically the only way to get onto the internet in South Africa, which is a huge change for Telkom, which in the past was, you know, I don't even remember when ADSL launched. Here's your 3 gigabytes.
Yeah, use only it wisely. Luck. Yeah.
Remember, at first you couldn't get even anymore.
No, you couldn't. Yeah. It was 3 gigs and you were cut off from the internet. That's a bad old days, John. And for that privilege of, I think it was a 512 kilobit per second line, you paid 680 rand a month.
Oh, terrible days. Yeah. Now we can gloat with our beautiful 1500 meg fiber connection.
That's right.
So they've what's interesting is they're going uncapped. They've cut their prices dramatically. I think at the top end, 100 meg sort of speeds, they've cut them by 50%.
Wow.
But then the thing they've done, which is really interesting, and I'm sure it's got some of their competitors hot under the collar, is they have basically signaled that voice has become a complete commodity. And they are bundling unlimited free voice calls to landlines and Telkom mobile numbers as part of your DSL uncapped plan, or fantastic. Your fiber uncapped plan.
That's fantastic.
They've also done away with line rental. You know, the old bugbear of having
separate
line rental.
That was the one thing we always wanted back in the day, right? And never got it.
It's still there. It's just been, it's just now part of the bundle you buy. So now you just buy this thing called Home Unlimited. You choose a speed, say 20 megs a second or 100 megs a second. You get uncapped data. They very clearly state what the fair use policy is. So there is a fair use policy, but the numbers are very high. If you're on a 100 meg line, your fair use cap is, and I use the cap term very loosely, is 6 terabytes. I don't think I'd ever be able to get to 6 terabytes of monthly usage on even on a 100 meg line.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Maybe not after the third month. Yeah.
Yeah, no. After you finish downloading the
once
internet.
You've got everything that you had in mind, that's
yes,
right.
Indeed. But even then, you don't get cut off. They just slow you down a bit.
That's right.
And you can still get full access to certain websites like your banking sites and that sort of thing. Mm. So very aggressive by Telkom. And I think it really signals, and they're the first operator in South Africa that's taken a completely data-led approach.
And I think the whole fiber rollout neighborhoods, they have to do something to keep some of these clients.
That's right.
And this is, I mean, let's not praise Telkom too much. This is in response to competition.
Absolutely.
And how many years too late, arguably?
Yeah.
Yeah, they could have owned the market if they'd done this 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, they're now facing a severe competition, not just from Vumatel, others as well. All the streets are getting dug up all the time, and they needed to ensure that they didn't lose market share. So, kudos to them for coming up with something that's quite this aggressive. It's something we can say that they needed to do it, but a big lumbering organization like Telkom often isn't capable of doing it, and they've done it.
Look, we can only look forward to some more interesting things, but to be honest with you, I mean, you and I often speak about this, Duncan. We've got fiber. What more do we need?
That's right.
Faster fiber.
Yeah. We're waiting for the 200 meg line.
Not yet. I'm waiting for them to dig up my street. I believe they are nearing my house, but currently I'm on LTE, so I'm still paying for it.
Oh, right. Okay. It'll change your life once it comes.
The speed is good, but the data is expensive currently, so I can't wait for fiber.
It's the symmetrical nature of fiber that changes it for me.
Yeah,
the fact that
speeds.
You can have the same upload speed as you have a download speed.
That's it.
On DSL, you're sitting on like half a meg up, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
On fiber, if you get a 100 meg line, you're sitting on 100 meg up, 100 meg down.
Phenomenal.
It changes everything.
Mm. That's it.
Mm. The internet becomes like another drive connected to your computer.
Oh, that's how we use Dropbox these days. I mean, Dropbox really is just a drive.
But that's exactly it. Cloud storage is now as good as a hard drive. Exactly.
Exactly.
Like you're saying.
Yeah. So that takes care of our news this week. Let's get on to our regular features. Our winner this week is Rob Shooter, the new group CEO of MTN. I think for reasons I elaborated on towards the beginning of the podcast, he got up in front of shareholders and investors and press at MTN's head office this week, yesterday in fact, Thursday, and set out what I thought was a very clear, lucid strategy about what he intends to do. Mm. You know, we often hear companies talking about strategies, but he set it out very clearly. He obviously spent a lot of time thinking about how he wanted to communicate the message. I think in the corporate world, you often these CEOs often end up confusing people through corporate BS. They could talk
hind leg off a donkey.
Hind leg off a donkey. Thank you. Yeah, in corporate speak, and he set it out very clearly what they plan to do, and it made sense. So the share price fell after the results came out, but I think that was more to do with the numbers than with Rob Shooter's strategy. So for setting out MTN's plans in such a lucid way, I thought he'd make a good winner on our show this week. And our loser is Serge Bellemont, who is the former CEO of NetOne UEPS Technologies, that controversial company that still manages the social welfare payments in South Africa, despite the Constitutional Court finding that contract was unlawful. Serge Bellemont was appointed at, I think it was a rate of $50,000 a month as a consultant to the group after they asked him to leave, or after he took early retirement, effectively was asked to step down. The shareholders were outraged by this, including Alan Gray and one or two others. I think International Finance Corporation also a big shareholder there. So the board announcing this week through a SEN statement through the JSE that Serge Bellemont's contract, which was to be for, I think, 2 years, is going to be terminated. So he won't be getting that big payout, that big windfall. So for that, he's our loser this week. Richard, what's your pick this week?
So I'll try to stay with the theme of home theater with my pick this week. And I don't know if you've heard about this, Warren or Duncan, but Netflix recently, and I say about a month ago, launched a Choose Your Own Adventure style program. Now, I don't know if you remember the books when we were kids.
That's right.
Read two or three pages, and then you pick the page you want to go to.
Where you're going on your story.
And you go to that. Yeah. So Netflix launched, or they're trialing it, or they launched it, but they're obviously trialing it before they introduce more titles. The first, obviously this is aimed at kids, so I mean, this is not going to be your Matrix-style action-adventure, although I would love to see that kind of choose your own ending on a good sci-fi. But the two programs to start with is The Adventures of Puss in Boots and Buddy Thunderstruck. Now, how this works is it doesn't work if you watch Netflix through a browser. It's only with the app because obviously there's some feedback mechanisms that's needed. But the story plays out like a normal animation as you get to a point where the character needs to make a choice. You select choice one or choice two, and then the story kind of takes it from there. It's a very cool concept. I had fun kind of playing with it and seeing how the story ends up. If I look at Puss in Boots, you know, if you choose your own story, the length of the story could range from about 18 to 40 minutes. So there's quite a broad sense of direction you can give your program. So that's my pick for this week. I think it's very cool. Remember, you need the app to actually make it work. But if you've got some kids, give them an iPad and let them choose an adventure.
Cool. Warren, I know we didn't speak beforehand. Do you by any chance have a pick?
You don't.
That's fine. Absolutely fine, because I have one right here. I'm usually the one who doesn't have a pick. So my pick this week is actually we've got a few people in the room here. Let me just ask who here is a former BlackBerry user?
Me.
Oh.
Right. We've got quite a few.
80% of the audience.
Current BlackBerry user. Oh wow! Look at that. That's a BlackBerry Priv, I think. Yes,
that's right.
That's a cool phone, actually. So you'll be interested in this device. This is the new, what do they call it? BlackBerry Key One. It's the first device made by TCL Communication under license from BlackBerry. BlackBerry, as you know, no longer makes smartphones themselves.
That's right.
They got out of that market last year, deciding to focus on more on the enterprise side of things. But they've licensed this company called TCL Communication, and this is the first device. It was announced at Mobile World Congress earlier this year, and it is being launched in South Africa next week at a recommended retail price of around 9,600 Rand. So it's a high-end phone through Vodacom exclusively for the first 3 months. So available through contracts on Vodacom. It's quite similar, actually, to the BlackBerry Priv, which was quite a clever device. I thought that slide-up screen and the keyboard that gets revealed underneath.
Yeah,
this is a very similar device, except it doesn't have a slide-up screen. It's the keyboard sits permanently on the front of the device, but the keyboard, like the Priv, is also a touch-sensitive keyboard. So you can do all sorts of interesting things with it, like swipe gestures and all that sort of thing. There's a fingerprint reader built into the space bar,
Very cool, a clever place to put it.
And it's running the latest version of Android 7.1.1. They claim it's the most secure Android phone in the market. I'm not sure how true that is, but that's the claim they make. Mm-hmm. It comes with the DTEC BlackBerry security software that checks apps and for malware and all that sort of thing. Keeps your device safe. And they say they will provide updates to the security every month for the lifetime of the device.
So they're clearly trying to keep their business custom, making sure, you know, the guys that type a lot and need that security is they're still catering for them.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot of the advantages of BlackBerry in the old days were the BIS service. Which you paid, I don't know, what, $50-$60 a month, and you basically had unlimited on-net device usage. That the operators have done away with that. This is Android. You're going to use a lot of data when you do updates and all that sort of thing. You'll use the same amount of data as you use in any other Android device. But it's a cool phone. I like it a lot, actually. It's slimline. It looks different. If you're looking, the problem with phones today is they all look the same.
Yeah.
You know, they're black slabs of glass. This is different. It's got a keyboard on the front. It's immediately noticeable that you're using something else. Some people might laugh at you for using a BlackBerry, but it's nice. I like it.
It certainly looks like a nice device. Yeah.
It's sort of upper mid range. It's not competing with an S8, for example. It's got a Qualcomm 625 processor in it. It's got 3 gigabytes of RAM. I think most of the high end ones are going 4, if not 5 gigs these days. But it's a nice device. I like it. Let me pass it around. There we go. It's solid. It feels solid. It looks robust. It looks like something BlackBerry would come up with.
That's right.
Looks like an iPhone at the bottom and a Sony on top.
That's right.
Look at the sharp edge and the round edge. That's very cool.
You're right.
Very
interesting. Very cool. And I think the QWERTY keyboard is something that a lot of clients and users would still appreciate.
Yeah.
That hard button tactile feel when it comes to typing out an email or SMS, I suppose.
Yes, yes.
I mean, who else does a keyboard on a phone these days? Nobody else.
No one. I don't think.
Everybody's kind of moved away from
it. It's all down to touch interface. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Nice phone.
So would you, the ex-BlackBerry users in the room, would you consider buying that?
Yes.
No.
Well, I think any BlackBerry user would love the opportunity to upgrade any of their devices, let's be honest.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. That Priv was nice. It was a very nice device, I must say. Yeah.
cool. Showing off the sliding keyboard over there.
Yeah, that Priv was fantastic. Great. I think we're almost done with the show. We need to just do our quiz results. Richard, do you want to do the first question?
Sure. The first question in this week's quiz. Who is the cybersecurity expert who stopped the WannaCry ransomware but was then arrested a week later in the US, or who was arrested in the US this week? The answer there is Marcus Hutchins.
Second question. Secom this week bought which Cape Town fiber provider? And that's a company called MacroLAN.
The third question, there's a new BlackBerry handset in South Africa. What is it called? And for a bonus point, which company has the license from Canada's BlackBerry to make it? The answer there is BlackBerry Key One and TCL Communication.
And fourth question, which well-known economist did Tech Central speak to on a podcast this week about cryptocurrencies and how they could change just about everything? And that is Russell Lamberti. I really recommend going to have a listen to that podcast for a very interesting podcast. Discussion.
And we finally know now what the cryptocurrency is, loosely.
We're starting to figure it out.
The last question in this week's quiz, Bitcoin has gone through a hard fork leading to the creation of a new cryptocurrency. What is this cryptocurrency called? The answer there is Bitcoin Cash.
That's our show. Warren, thank you so much for joining us. If people want to find out more about Homemation, is the website they can go to?
Yeah, absolutely. So check us out at www.homemation.co.za. That's H-O-M-E, another M-A-T-I-O-N.co.za. Give us a call at our offices, 011-781-8887.
Thank you for joining us today, and thank you for the use of this 3 million rand what do you call a showroom?
The most expensive podcast we've ever recorded. That's what we call it.
Indeed. And I'm going to insist that you fire up this audio as soon as we finish recording here, because I can't wait to hear it. Warren, thank you. And from myself and Rechard, until next week, take care, everyone. Cheers.
Ciao. Bye.